Hey, look who the cat dragged in. It's Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. So there are whispers that their time has come to fade away into the sunset. Time to drift away on the electronic wind with Laserdiscs, VHS, and Zune players. But can the role of 8-bit MCUs in the electronic engineering ecosystem be dismissed so easily? Maybe not. In this week's episode of Fish Fry, Nikos Servas, CEO of Cast IP, joins us to discuss the changing role of 8-bit MCUs in the EE ecosystem, how Cast IP works with their partners to bring innovative IP cores to the market, and how their new GZIP data compression IP can reduce power consumption for a variety of designs. So, we got a lot to cover, my friends. Let's get started. Hi, Nikos. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. Okay, so first off, give my audience a brief update on what Cast is all about.
So, Cast is a 25-year-old company. We have been doing IP cores since 1996. And at that time, the term IP core was not even invented. So, take out ARM. I think we are the oldest IP vendor around. And what we do is we develop IP cores ourselves, but we also bring to market IP cores from third parties. Now, someone listening to that would say, okay, Cast is a rep too. And that's not exactly true, because what we do is that we scan the market to identify IP cores that could be of interest to our customers next. And then we work with their developers to bring them to the quality levels that are required. And we're working with two types of partners. The first type is large organizations that are not necessarily structured around selling or supporting IP cores. And we have like Panasonic as a partner of ours and Fraunhofer, which is a huge German research institute. None of them are organized in a way to, you know, support the IP core business. So we come in, we get either the results of the research, in the case of Fraunhofer, or their internal designs, in the case of Panasonic, and we productize them as IP cores. So, and the second type of customers, partners we've got, is smaller vendors that don't necessarily have the capacity to promote their great technology. And we come in, we work with them in order to productize it and promote it properly. In many cases, we have to even re-engineer some of what they do in order to do so, and we bring that to the market. So, we bring value to our partners and to our customers in the sense that we enable our customers access to IP cores that they wouldn't have access to otherwise. We have morphed to a different type of company. We were 8051-centric for a number of years. We have expanded, and one of the areas we've expanded is the automotive interfaces. We have what we believe is the leading offering for CAN bus and CAN FD bus, which is the most popular automotive interface bus. And right now in this show, we are announcing our TSN, Automotive Ethernet subsystem, which is the first of its kind to be offered as an IP core. So we try to keep leadership on that end. And at the same time, we are developing what we've also been traditional in doing, which is compression. We have accelerators for GZIP, which is, you know, it's used everywhere. But GZIP is very important for data centers that has huge volumes of data that they need to compress and decompress in real time. And we have like a unique solution for that. We can do 80 gigabits, 100 gigabits per second on a single FPGA card that one can hook into a server, where previous solutions were not able to go that fast and not to the same levels of compression that we can do. So this is kind of exciting times for us on both ends.
Cool. Okay, so let's talk about 8-bit. Now, many in our industry think 8-bit MCUs are dying out, that the bigger MCUs are just taking over completely. But I think that might not be the case. Is that what you guys are seeing?
Well, there's some truth in the statement that 8-bits are dying out, as many designers don't even consider using them when they have to make a choice. And there's practically no good reason in most of those cases, technical reason, that drives the decision. because 8-bit microcontrollers can be smaller, more power efficient, as long as they can do the job. So the reason that why this is happening is because whole generations of engineers have been raised without even knowing the existence of 8-bit microcontrollers. You go through the university, you go into your labs, you use a 32-bit thing, and then you get a job, you know, you'll use the same thing. However, we have seen people rediscovering the value of 8-bit cores. And actually, the first quarter of this year was our most successful for the last 10 years. I think we've licensed more 8051 cores in one quarter than we did since 2006, I think, or something like that. And this is a good reason. People are rediscovering how they can get power savings by using 8-bit microcontrollers. 32-bit microcontrollers or CPUs, in many cases, they are an overkill. You don't need them, right? So people that are sort of want to think outside the box, they go with 8-bit machines. And hopefully we are here to, you know, to get the word out and convince more people to go down that path.
I love that. All right, so let's go back to GZIP a little bit and talk about power consumption. Now, a hot button issue for almost any industry these days. Now, you guys have some really interesting codecs that help with that. Tell my audience more about that.
Yeah, so compression IP cores are tricky in the sense that when you develop them, you have freedom to optimize them for different use cases. If we, example, take video compression, it's totally different when you design something to address the broadcasting market, where you're displaying into large displays and you know, quality mandates, video quality mandates all the decision. And it's totally different when you have a real-time streaming applications with ultra-low latency requirements, like streaming from a drone or remotely controlling a drone based on video and what have you. So what we have in terms of image and video compression, they are designed for the second type of application. So they are designed for ultra-low latency real-time streaming. Compared to cores that are designed for the needs of the broadcasting industry, ours are way smaller and more efficient. It's not just a matter of logic, how many gates our cores use. It's also a matter of what is the memory footprint, how much memory they need, and what is the bandwidth to these memories. And for the type of applications that we're targeting, we are delivering much lower power. The other dimension here is that our cores are designed in a way that are scalable in terms of performance. So when you don't have ultra high definition at 60 frames per second, you can actually use a smaller core, okay? You don't use a cannon to kill like a fly, right? But then when people really want to go for 4K and 60 frames per second, our cores, we can scale the internal structure of our cores, and they will process at that those processing rates. So these are what sort of makes us make our codecs different from competition.
All right, Nikos, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. You have one meal left on the planet Earth. This is it. You're going to have one last meal. What is it going to be?
This is a tough question. So one meal, the last. So it would be my mom's moussaka. Yeah, mom's food is always, you know, for everyone, it's the best, right? And my mom's moussaka is excellent. So.
Well, I love that answer. And anybody who gives a shout out to their mom wins points with me. All right. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Here at EE Journal, we love our cars. Did you know that one of our editors, Jim Turley, was a race car driver? It's true. Heck, even this week's Thursday feature by Steve Liebson entitled MEMS LiDAR for Driverless Vehicles Takes Another Big Step is about cars, or autonomous vehicles to be specific. And I personally love everything along those lines. On Fish Fry, I have reported on autonomous cars delivering pizzas, 3D printed autonomous vehicles, and more. And this next story fits in line with all of that. Let me introduce you to Street Drone, an open source autonomous car platform. Yes, building your very own autonomous car could easily be in your future with a little help from this new platform from Street Drone. So, first, what kind of car are we going to create? Well, not the 57 Chevy, powder blue with white leather interior, which is my dream car. No, no. We're going to be building a Renault Twizy. Now, if you haven't heard of the Renault Twizy before, it's a single-seater, 17-horsepower, pretty tiny electric car. Imagine it this way. If you had two motorcycles parked next to each other in close proximity, they would be bigger than this car. Okay, so what makes the Renault Twizy super cool for this kind of application? Well, the design of the Twizy is very modular. The bodywork basically clips onto its space-time chassis. Now, in addition to that modular bodywork, you of course have four wheels and an independent suspension. On a single charge, this electric Renault Twizy can go about 62 miles or 100 kilometers. Okay, so tiny modular electric car, check. On top of the basic vehicle, Street Drone has added power braking and power steering systems, which are controlled by their XCU platform, which is basically like a central nervous system that connects the self-driving hardware to the car itself. Another interesting aspect of this platform is that Street Drone has implemented what they call their fail-stop system. Now, integral to all autonomous vehicles are fail-safe systems, right? Well, Street Drone is differentiating their autonomous vehicle platform by including this fail-stop system, which is more akin to what is used in aircraft, where you basically have a double redundancy on all systems. And the open source software part of this is that Street Drone is developing their software on ROS, or the Robot Operating System. Okay, fine print time. This whole kit, you guys, is gonna cost you around $93,000. Yeah, I know, not cheap by any means. But you kind of don't want it to be cheap, right? I mean, some things aren't meant to be inexpensive, like a $2.99 steak or a $4 haircut. Don't do either of those. Trust me. The road forward for these guys is really interesting. CEO Mark Preston says they want to be the Raspberry Pi of autonomous cars, and that their main targets with this platform are the real innovators in EE, the universities, the startups, the guys with too much money on their hands. And this all isn't in theory or in PowerPoint land. There is actually a video of a Street Drone Renault Twizy in action on YouTube, which shows a Twizy that taught itself how to drive down a lane from scratch in 20 minutes. Yeah, 20 minutes. That's it. So if you want to see that Twizy in action, or if you want to check out more information about Street Drone, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Speaking of makers, Arduino has been a centerpiece of the maker community for quite a while now. But have you ever considered it for a professional project? Oh, yes. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Bringing Arduino into the Professional Environment, I sit down with Bob Martin from Microchip and chat about how Arduino can be an excellent platform for professional and commercial application development and deployment. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, or you can check out the Chalk Talk section right on the top of eejournal.com, or also head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including that very popular Chalk Talk webcast series I mentioned earlier. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can check out our Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of July 13th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.